Hi, this is Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
To the default setting, where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
Today, we have a very special guest. He is a former electrician, environmental health and safety guy, and someone who actually had a good deal of involvement in my being alive. My father, Mr. Bill Ockletree, sorry, how are you, Dad?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
Your default setting is nature lover.
Yep.
So for those who don't know, my parents, you live where you were born, correct, Dad?
Yeah, wait, but the south end of the property where I grew up, born and grew up.
So
oh, wow.
Were you born in Mama and Papa's house?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Actually, it was in Mansfield, but the house is only 100 yards from here.
Yeah.
The original house.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. I thought you just meant like, oh, same city. That's yeah. Way more.
No. We traveled around a lot. Well, I mean, I did. I traveled around a lot when I was young. After my teen years, I joined the Air Force and went to different places, but...
Oh, wow.
We ended up back here. It's a beautiful little valley, and really love it.
So where I grew up is where my parents still live, and it's a beautiful, beautiful countryside. I appreciate it so much more now that I live in the city. I don't think I appreciated it at all, spending like the first 22 years of my life there. But now that I've lived in cities pretty much the last 15 years of my life, I love going home to visit. I especially love going home to visit just because I live 2,500 miles away and I miss my family greatly.
But now you have like a point of reference. I think if before you don't appreciate something when you don't have, like, you don't know the difference. Like,
exactly.
You were used to it, and now you've seen the other stuff.
And that's,
now you're like, oh, okay.
That's a good question, I guess, for you, Dad, was that when you started living other places, did that make you appreciate where you grew up that much more, and that's why you wanted to come back?
Not immediately it didn't, because it was just finding my own way, you know, basically finding out who I was.
Yeah.
As an individual. And it took me several years to really start appreciating. I came back in this area several times and left several times.
Yeah.
And I think once we got back here to stay, I learned to appreciate it really a lot more than I did then. I did, as I was growing up as a teenager, you know, young teenager and stuff, I spent a lot of time in the surrounding woodlots and stuff, either hunting or hiking or just out enjoying ourselves, you know, with my cousins and stuff, you know, playing in the woods and stuff. But I really don't think I realize how tranquil, I guess, this setting is as far as giving you some relaxation and peace of mind when you're here, as opposed to all the things in a city that just give you more of a uptight feeling.
Yeah.
Where are some of the other places that you were like traveling to and living? Like,
okay, I've lived in several different places, mostly after I in the Air Force, but I started in the Air Force. My first base was in New Hampshire, in southeastern New Hampshire, in Portsmouth. And I was there about a year and a half, and then transferred to Vietnam and spent about 9 months in Vietnam. But on the way to Vietnam, I traveled to Los Angeles and San Francisco and got to know that a little bit. And so I saw that, you know, there was a lot left of the country. And then as a teenager, I did forget this, but as a teenager, we did take a vacation. One of my teachers and his wife took some of the students. We went to the Southwest and through California and back. And that's all I looked at. So I knew that I really love mountain territories and stuff. So I wanted to get there someday. Mm-hmm. So, but my time, I think, spent in New England made me appreciate the mountains and all the remote areas that there are around. We have some, you know, hills here and everything, but not the mountains. And then my family was from West Virginia, so I spent, you know, some summers there, but they're in the hilly part of the state and not the mountains. So I really got to enjoy the mountains so much. So when Jessica was young, we started traveling, you know, to Colorado and places like that to see
the mountains. Nice.
And really, really enjoy all that.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, and I think about it more and more now as to like, now that I live in the city, I find myself like, we're going to Monterey for Labor Day weekend. And ooh. And one of the biggest reasons I want to go to Monterey, my mom's probably yelling in the background that she wants to go, is that like, they brought me up like wanting to be near nature. And that's why I want to go to Monterey, is because I want to see whales. I want to see otters. I want to see, like, I'm just obsessed. I'm obsessed with like learning about wildlife. And I remember too, like growing up, like, so my dad has, do you still have your gun collection, Dad?
No.
You don't? Okay.
No, I gave up hunting probably what, first year we were married, I think. Yeah. And basically it was because I got too good at it. I felt bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't its challenge anymore.
No. I actually got to a point, I spent so much time in the woods as a young man, I would experiment with calling the animals and stuff, you know, but listen to what they sounded like, and they would just come to me, and I was like, I can't shoot this thing. It's coming right up to me.
Aw, yeah, you can't kill bit, like, you're out there like Snow White, and they're just coming in. You could probably get them to help you with your chores.
I never realized this, but yeah, my dad is totally a Disney princess. Like, my dad is absolutely a Disney princess.
They could help you get dressed in the morning. How nice would it be to have like an animal just come and like put your socks on for you?
Well, and
it's like the worst part.
I just remember like Dad showing me, like, when we were growing up, like what a sick animal looked like. And that's like the only time you should really ever like kill an animal, is because it's sick and you're putting it out of its misery. And like, that's just kind of like my whole ethos, is like, you know, I love animals, but like sometimes you have to do what's necessary in order to like help them. Like that's where my whole attitude on like euthanasia and all that sort of thing comes from. So I'm just kind of fascinated to learn, like, when as a kid, like, was it Papa that sort of brought you up hunting?
Yes.
Okay.
He started me, because of this lot was always a weedy lot, and that just around the house up there was where it was all mowed.
Mm-hmm.
So this area was all hunting area here. There was rabbits, squirrels, pheasants, and all kinds of animals in here. And he started basically taking me with him and teaching me to shoot a little .22 rifle when I was 4 years old.
Oh, wow!
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I know a 4-year-old I would want to let. But,
it's one of those things that back then it was normal. I mean, a more normal, you supplemented your food with game.
Yeah.
It was more normal. You know, it did save money and such. So we did a lot of hunting, and then most of it was local here. I hunted local in this area right here until I was a teenager. Then he would take me with him when he went hunting elsewhere. So yeah, I knew I was good gun safety training, and I could keep up with him and all that. So I thought that was pretty good. But I've always felt, you know, once we started going into the woods and stuff, I've always felt at my most peaceful, I think, in those kind of areas, and that's why I like traveling to those kind of areas now.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a. I feel like it's too, when you like nature, that saves you money on vacation too, because you don't need to spend money on a big hotel and entertainment stuff. You just, you know, you bring or kill your own dinner, and you know.
Although you've met my mother, so you know that she balances that out very well.
Okay, good.
She's where I
so
get
there's
my.
Some,
my fanciness and my desires for the finer things in life comes from my mother.
Well, I want to go on vacation with your family. It sounds like there's a there's something in it for everybody.
I know, exactly. That's the thing I always love about traveling with them is that we will be in nature because that they both absolutely love nature. But like, we're not gonna just like sleep in like a fucking corrugated house, corrugated metal. We're not gonna sleep in a box, you know. Like, we're gonna sleep in like a really nice like cabin somewhere. Like, it's gonna be
no tarps.
Yeah, no tarps. Like, it's gonna be
running water,
nice.
Running water, and lots of wine.
Running
I like
water,
the way.
Nice wine, exactly. Yeah, like
perfect.
Glamping is literally like our wheelhouse. Like, glamping is what we.
That's my favorite. Yeah. that sounds like the most relaxing kind of vacation.
It's funny actually because when we plan on going to Monterey, the first thing I looked up was they have luxury yurts. Dad, I don't know if you've seen yurts before. So yurts are like, they're like half cabin, half tent, and they're massive. They're like these big, like 360 tents, and they have like these skylights, and like, I guess they have them in Big Sur, and they overlook the ocean, so you can see like whales and like all the stuff, but it's in the woods, and I really, really wanted to do it, because it was only like $115 a night or something.
That's all?
But they were all booked for our Labor Day weekend, which is when we're going, so yeah, that's fine.
That's fine. I'm actually going to a cabin next weekend with my friends. It's like my high school friends. They're like, yeah, we're just going down to like Hocking Hills or something.
Yeah, I
haven't been down there before. And I'm like,
oh,
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, mom
like
and dad.
I have a couple acres and people just bring their dogs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Mom and dad used to take us all the time when we were kids. You guys used to take us all the time to Hocking Hills.
Yeah.
Have you guys been in a while?
No. When's the last time we went down there? 8 years ago, somewhere on there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They
find these like really cool. You guys should be Ohio tourism like board people because they find the most amazing little like weekend getaways in Ohio.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
I had my environmental job. I traveled through Ohio a lot, and I found all these places in Ohio I didn't realize that were so interesting, like Hocking Hills and all those areas there. With like caves and waterfalls and just all kinds of nature things. So, we would take them on those like surprise trips to a log cabin once. We took them to a weekend of that.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
Little trips to like the little parks and stuff that were out of the way and not well known and all over. Like, I think open up. We took one to Kelly's Island where they had that cave, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
So we take trips a little bit everywhere. It was really interesting to find things that I hadn't seen before myself.
Mm-hmm. So. We did that with my dad. He took us. We went to like Kelly's Island. We saw the glacier grooves, and we're from Cleveland, so we've always had like the metro parks right there, the Cleveland Metro Park.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful metro park.
It's so nice because they just go down. Their nature center's always been nice, and then we've gone down to like took us down to Wright Pat, and then we went to like the Snake Mound and the Seven Caves. But I think the Seven Caves are closed now.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't think that they're around
Didn't
anymore.
Didn't we go to, like, Zanesville? There's, like, caverns or something down there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys always find the coolest stuff. There's, what is it that, like, there's that treehouse in Amish country you guys went to, too, right?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Where was that?
Well, they've got, like, what is it, 4 or 5 of them? Yeah. Treehouses they built along the side of a ravine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, that 30 to 50 feet up, they built them out over the ravine on like big platforms with steel posts, their big cabins. And then you go out on the deck, you're like right up in the top of the tree with the squirrels and stuff. You're like right up in these giant nut trees all out there. And it's really nice.
That's so cool.
I know.
I
want to
go
there.
Like, they went, where'd you guys go? You guys went last year? Did you guys go last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay. Because you told me about it. I was like, I want to go. And then I was like, oh, no, I live far away. I can't do that now. when we're done talking, I want to plan. They're coming to visit in October, and I want to plan, like, a million things
fun.
For when they come out because they have much more adventurous ideas than I usually do, which is, like, usually I go get drunk in Venice.
I mean, that's always a good time,
what,
too.
What mom I was say? Just,
Yurts in Monterey.
Yurts in Monterey. Let's do it. Woo!
That was one of our most memorable trips was to Monterey with the whale watch.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Liz, let me know when I can fly you out here and we're all going to go to Monterey.
Sounds good.
All right.
Yeah, I want to go. I'm down.
That's what I was going to say. Liz, let me know when you finally get vacation time funny. And I'm going to fly your butt out here and we're going to go.
I mean, you tell me when to take it, lady.
Okay, so you used to hunt as a kid, right, Dad?
Yes.
And then what was about the age where you decided you just kind of wanted to observe nature more than hunt?
I think I just hunted right up until Mom and I were married.
Okay.
Not as much. I noticed over the years it was getting too easy. We're getting to the point where we're not processing the game like before. It was part of our, yeah, I got to the point where if I wasn't going to process the animal for food, it wasn't worth it. And it was too easy for me.
Yeah.
And, and I decided to, you know, appreciate them alive more than, food basically.
Yeah. A trophy.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad I did that before I got to the point where we're traveling through the mountain territories where the elk and the moose and the goats and stuff like that were. Because now when I got to that point, I really could appreciate nature in its natural way rather than looking at it as something to stalk.
Yeah.
You don't have to look at it like a competition or a challenge. It's just let it be.
You mentioned you were, was it in high school when you first started traveling out to the mountains?
Let's see here. I'm trying to think. Yeah, we went, it was in my senior year. We traveled out through Southwest and went out to Southern California. And we came in at Needles and we traveled up through South, I don't know, we up through Eastern California to, and we ended up coming out, Coloma.
Okay.
I guess it's somewhere around, I'm not sure where that would be, but I know we did go through at one point. We went through Lake Tahoe. I know that.
Okay.
Ooh.
So then we came back through, I think, like Montana and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like a 3-week trip, but it was pretty exhausting, but it was, I think that really inspired my love of the mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make a big difference from Ohio going just about anywhere with mountains.
Like, yeah, I would say, yeah, it's like I never got to see, oddly enough, my family's originally from West Virginia, my mom and dad and all of their families. But I never got to see the real mountains of West Virginia until probably, I would say, right after I got out of the service, I took a trip through there and was surprised at how big some of those mountains were. But then when we got later on in life got to Colorado and it's like, wow, these are awesome.
Yeah, I remember when I was visiting my friend in Germany, we were in Munich and we were driving down to see, like, go to a castle, and we were driving like into the Alps and it was blowing my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my god, so this is just the Alps. Holy crap. It was crazy.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. Now, have you been through Colorado?
I have not.
If you go to Colorado, then you're going to appreciate this. Go to Ouray.
Ouray?
Yeah, it's on Route 50 or 55 or something like that. It is the American version of the Alps. It is one of the most beautiful small towns in America. It's got this real steep, peaky mountains, waterfalls and everything. And the
that's the best.
Right up the middle of all that.
It's an old.
Oh my gosh.
It's an old gold mining town, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I remember there was like a ghost town there, and like there was a bunch of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Man, that's even cooler. It's like mountains and history. I'm like, oh, put a museum in there, and I'm done. It sounds great.
Ouray is kind of a nice little well-kept secret in Colorado. Like, it's not one of those, like, resort skiing towns. It's just kind of nice and...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, I've never been skiing, and it doesn't really interest me.
Me either.
Yeah, I don't really like falling and jump. I'm good.
What's really ironic is that, like, we would go to Colorado, and Colorado is one of our favorite places as a family to go to, but none of us ski. Like, none of us are skiers. None of us are, like, snowboarders. Oh, those cornfields. Those cornfields will get you. See, so this is the downside of nature, is being inside nature. You have no technology anymore.
Yeah. In the nature without the technology.
We got it. Your voice sounds great now. You have, like, very high quality sound now. It's good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're good. Okay. So, so you went on a trip. How long was the trip when you were a senior in high school that you went on, Dad?
It was like 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Okay. And didn't you tell me, like, a really cool story about, like, people falling off a cliff or something?
Well, yeah. Well, there's a couple incidents that happened on that trip that were very dramatic.
Yeah.
And they both happened to me, unfortunately.
So, oh, no!
We camped out in a campground that was directly opposite the Half Dome in Yosemite.
Cool.
And we basically were looking at it, right straight at it. At the almost to the top of it, we were like probably halfway up it, and people but they were starting to climb it more, and we were watching climbers up, and we were up there fairly high in one of the campgrounds. The first thing I know of was one night, I had me go out and get campfire wood because my teacher's wife was a gourmet cook, so, you know, she would make all our meals, which were all really good stuff. She would be
best kind of person to travel with.
Yeah, she would use, you know, like different things that I'm not used to. I'm, you know, used to normal farm stuff, and we had some meals that I wasn't used to, and we ate just to give you a little hint, we ate stuff like rattlesnake and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's badass.
Firewood, and as I'm loading up my arm with the firewood, I've been over to pick up some wood. I'm probably about maybe 50, 70 feet back into the pine trees there going, getting all this dry wood. And I stood up, and about 10 feet away was a bear standing on its hind paws.
Oh, my God.
Grizzly.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
And then I did something you absolutely are never supposed to do.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I did one thing that probably helped. I took all the firewood, threw it in his face, and turned and ran. and I think that's the only thing that saved me.
I
was going to say, spoiler alert, you made it out. So.
the number one thing they always tell you, because my mom and I went to Alaska a couple years ago, and the thing they said, like, 800 times is, like, if a grizzly bear walks up to you, just fall down. Dead,
don't
move.
Run,
because they run like 40 miles an hour, like you cannot run them. Yeah,
yep. So I must have ran into Yogi. I don't know.
You got a friendly bear, maybe it was Winnie the Pooh or something.
Winnie the Pooh,
you got the good one or the lazy one.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, then there was another day. We were there probably about 3 days, maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, but one of the other days we were out hiking in that area, mm-hmm. and there was a pathway. It's like real narrow pathway, went straight down a cliffside to a stream, and the stream from the top down the cliff to the bottom was about 50 feet up. And so there was three of us. It was two guys, and they brought the girl with them too. And we were out hiking, just decided to go down to the stream to see what we could get, you know, because we had seen what looks like some interesting rocks down in there, because it was real, you know, how the mountain water is really clear and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd been down there before and picked up a couple little rocks of turquoise, and then I think some jade too, and I still got the jade. My uncle made it into one of those little Western necktie things.
Oh, bolos, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I still got that somewhere here at the house.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
But we decided to go back down there and look at some more stuff. So I started down. I'm walking down. Well, the girl decided she wanted to go down too. And I don't know if she was used to hiking up and down hills stuff, which I was around here, so it didn't bother me much.
Mm-hmm.
But she started to go, and this was all like rock and hard clay and stuff out there. Well, she apparently slipped on some gravel and stuff. And instead of sitting down and just sliding, she started running down the
track. No, no.
It was about a 45 to 50 degree angle.
Oh, God. No. You can't stop.
And I'm about halfway down, which would be about 25 feet up from the stream. And I'm like, oh. And she was running right at me. And then she kept going faster and faster. And I tried to get her to sit down, and she's just panicked. So I said, okay, the only thing I can do is, you know, try to brace myself and grab her when she goes. So when she got to me, I just wrapped my arms around her, and she had slammed into me so hard, we both went off the cliff 25 feet up.
Oh, jeez.
And landed in the stream. I landed on my back in the stream. The water was about 3 feet deep or something like that.
Oh, God.
And so that broke the fall, thank goodness. But I ended up, when I got up, I had a little, about an inch and a half gash right in the middle of the back of my head, right above the neck.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't know it at the time because I didn't feel anything. I was in so much shock.
So, well, you know, nice, cool water.
Yeah. And, yeah, especially mountain water. And, you know, she was okay with him. She was scared to death. So when we got up, you know, and we're like, are you okay? And, yeah, she was okay. Well, then, and I'm looking around, and as I'm looking around, she goes, oh, my gosh, you cut yourself. So I said, is it bad? She goes, it looks like it's a good cut. And with the cold water, it hadn't started really bleeding yet. So we went back up the thing. They got some bandages that they had some somebody had first aid kit, and they put on it. And I don't even think we had stitches because it wasn't really deep. I think it was just, you know, like a superficial cut.
But like a really big scratch.
Bled a lot.
Yeah.
So they put they put band-aids on it and everything, and I had a pretty good headache after that for a while. But, but that was it. That was just I was just glad that you know both of us lived through that. But that
yeah, nice of you. You took one for the team. She owes you, man.
My dad instilled chivalry from a young age. Yeah, no, I think that is what I love too is like you have so many cool stories that I'm just now finding out about. That's one of my favorite. When you were in New Hampshire, did you have any like things like did you go out to the mountains in New Hampshire at all?
Oh yeah, a lot of my friends and I went up to White Mountains a lot. We got to see the Old Man in the Mountain several times.
I love that. Oh.
Yeah, and when I was up there, I had bought a when I got back from Vietnam, I bought a small motorcycle, so I took it up there. And
oh
so
wow!
Everybody else had a smaller, you know, it weren't really big motorcycles. We decided to take a road trip up in that area, so we went up there and was having a good time. But when we came back, not too far from where I was stationed, they decided that there was a gravel pit. They wanted to go in and go.
Oh no!
Go riding.
Oh no!
At that time, I wasn't riding my bike. I was riding another guy's bike, and I was just trying it out because it had a little more power than mine. And so there was, you know, the gravel pits itself. But then in the middle, toward the middle of the gravel pits, there were areas that were like real. A lot of stone and stuff, like the big big slabs of stone, so they couldn't dig it out, so they just left it. And it was a spot that was probably about 25 feet around that you could go up like a ramp on one side, go up to the top of that. Well, they decided they wanted to ride up there. So I rode up, or they rode up to the top, the guy and his, and then the girl he was with rode up, and then the girl I was with at the time was on the back of my motorcycle. We rode up, and we got to the hill, up the top of the hill. I was going a little too fast, and it was crashed. So I hit the brakes, slid, started sliding across that thing, stopped right at the edge, and it was probably 70 feet down.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my God! That's terrifying.
And I'm, like, sitting there, like, oh, God, thank you, thank you, thank you. I was literally, the front tire was halfway off the end.
Oh my God!
Oh,
so I thought really good. Oh God, this is great. She bailed off the back. The bike went over the cliff.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Next thing I know, I'm going head over heels down this cliff. Fortunately, it was like where they had dug out the dirt and gravel out around it. It was like a, it wasn't straight down. It went out about from where I was, it went out probably another 10 feet at the bottom.
So you were rolling down with the bike.
Well, part of the way. I probably went down 10 feet and then hit where the hill kicked out. Mm-hmm. And then the bike flipped over and it threw me off, and it slid the rest of the way down, and I went head over heels. I had a helmet on. Head over heels all the way down and landed sitting up at the bottom.
Oh my God.
How I didn't break my neck, I don't know.
Wait, how are either of us alive right now? That's what I want to know. Like, how do I exist? Like, I don't understand how I exist. I don't understand how you exist.
Clearly, it was meant to be.
I guess.
I think I'm one of the clutchest people in the world. I've got fantastic guardian angels. One of the two.
Yeah.
It could be both. It could also be both.
Fate is clearly on your side.
Yes. Well, now I understand where I inherited my ability to fall down, because I do that a lot. Although you are far more adventurous than me, because I think if I were that adventurous and as clumsy as I am, I would have been dead very long time ago.
Yeah, well, needless to say, I got rid of the motorcycle shortly after.
I mean, that sounds like one of those experiences.
I never had another one.
That sounes like one of those experiences that'll help you get over it. Like, oh, yeah, it was fun, but I did it and I'm good.
Not going to do that again.
Nope.
Yeah.
Once is enough.
So when you were...
Yeah, playing with fire after that.
When you were in... So you went to Vietnam after New Hampshire, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever get a chance to really experience, like, nature in Vietnam, or were you pretty much on base the whole time?
No. Over there, my job actually was working in the body shop there. It was right in Thon Son Nhut. It was a base that is where the shop is. It was right next to the fence where the first Tet Offensive started.
Oh, wow.
In our town. And there's a tower out from where I worked. That's where they fought off the Viet Cong. Wow. Right there. And so I got to see Saigon from that point one time. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to different people there about going into town. They said, if you go into town, we'll tell you two things. Either go into the ground, into town, you go either go in with a big group,
mm-hmm.
or you go by yourself. They said, if you go with anything less than a big group, you'll probably get attacked, because they'll see it as a weakness. They'll see that you're scared. But with a big group, they're not going to mess with you. You know, like the what they call the cowboys, which were like gang members that would mug you.
Okay.
Oh.
And they said, if you go in by yourself, they'll think either you're the worst world best badass or you're crazy. And they respect both. They do not mess with crazy people, because it's bad luck to mess with crazy people.
Wow.
That's crazy. The first one was like, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So being the young person that I was, I thought, I'm going to enter by myself. So I went into Saigon and was wandering around, and it was a beautiful city at that time before everything got, you know, messed up. But I ran into a couple small orphans that were like mini gang members. But they offered to give me a tour. And I thought, okay, these kids are about 10 years old, maybe, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we protect you. I thought, okay, fine. And I gave them their equivalent of $5 each. That's almost a half a year's worth of money in their
world. Back in the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was awesome. You don't throw that kind of money at somebody unless you're really wanting to get a good tour, or you're richer than heck, one of the things. Like,
mm-hmm.
So they took me through the city, especially the zoo. They had a beautiful zoo there.
Oh, really?
And I've got a few pictures. I don't know if I got them at the zoo. I still got them somewhere of the different things. Because I had my camera one time I went down there. And then I went to, like, an orphanage over there. We went by an orphanage, and they talked to some of the kids there because they knew them. Mm-hmm. And these kids, it was a big fence there. And it reminded me of going to the APL or somewhere where the little dogs and kitties are inside the fenced in areas, and they're come over and look through the cages at you.
We want to take them all home.
That was what was like, oh my gosh, yeah, these poor kids were just so cute, but all their parents had gotten killed in the war, or were in detention camp somewhere or something. Oh, you know, wow. So it was an eye opening for somebody from a rural community. It was a real eye opening thing for me. And so it was quite an experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said you were there for 9 months?
Yes.
When you came back, was that when you spent, I think you told me you'd spent some time in California when you got back?
Yes. We overnighted there. Guy and I flew back, coming back to Ohio. There was not much going on until we decided to leave there. I mean, but I did have, when I woke up, the next morning after we got there, I was stayed overnight, and apparently he went out and found a girl somewhere and spent some time with her. Well, he came in like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. And at that point, I was dreaming that I was out in one of the firefight places, and a Viet Cong was coming over the little retention area and was attacking. And he came in and shook me to tell me what his night was like. I almost killed him.
Oh, no!
Jesus.
I thought I was being attacked. I slammed me into the wall, and I was jumping on him and choking him.
Oh, no!
Well, that's so
right. You get awake, you know. And it was like,
yeah. Oh. Well, you just get off the plane, and then it's like, oh, it's back to, like, this level of normalcy.
It's sort of
your
hard.
Your brain doesn't get to catch up.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in country that just you carry with you. I know I really know the Army guys. They probably carry it with them today.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of them. And a lot of them say you can't go home. Well, that's these guys. They never did. Their old selves were left over there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Really different people now these days. So, but I didn't think, you know, I'd seen enough of that to bother me, but then that was my first hint, I think, that it affects you worse than you think it does.
Yeah, just being over there, I'm sure during that time, like, you don't have to see anything crazy, like, that's it's just, that would be enough. There's so much going on, and so much to still be scared of, like.
Yep. I mean, I got a unique position, because in basic training, with all my hunting experience, I fired expert marksman with an M16.
Oh, nice.
And the first time I did it, they didn't believe me. They said, you know, somebody else shot your target. So they made everybody quit, and then they made me fire by myself. Well, I fired 100 out of 100 the first time.
Wow.
Oh, snap.
The second time I did a 98.
Wow.
So if I'd have been in the Army, I would have been a point man or a sniper.
Yeah.
So I was just glad I was in the Army. So, but anyway, that I thought was just, not going to be mean anything. Well, when I got over there, they found this out. So they put me in charge of a squad that patrolled the inside of the base. So I had sometimes on my off-duty hours, from my day job, I would go out and patrol the base with these guys. So one of my friends, actually my best friend over there, Jim, was from Chicago. He had been in the motorcycle gang there, but he's one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. he was just, you know, crazy. And he was in my group. He was in my, assigned to my squad. Well, they let me pick the guys. I said, Jim, I said, every guy you know that's the biggest, nastiest guy that you can think of, get me. So my squad looked like a Green Bay Packer team.
I was
5'6". These guys, I don't think any one of them was under 6 foot tall. big guys. I mean, they were good guys to be around in that situation, you know, but you don't know if you'd ever want to hang with somebody you like. But we never really got into anything, because, you know, they kept them away from the base pretty good. And we had, I think, one rocket attack while I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was like I mean, I compare my time to Vietnam like scenes from MASH. We had more of the funny scenes from MASH than we did actually really nasty.
Good.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, some of the things that happened there, I always thought, hear this kind of stuff, yeah, you're making it up. And no, and there's some of this stuff is just so crazy, it's actually true.
When you came home from Vietnam, did you move back to Ohio?
Yeah, okay. Not right away. Okay. I spent a year at a base in New Hampshire, not New Hampshire, Massachusetts, on the West End.
Okay.
And then I found out that they were closing the base, turning over to civilians, and then they tried to send me to Kansas twice. Mm. When I was going home from Vietnam, they wanted to send me to Kansas. Well, I got very good friends with the first sergeant there, and he came out of his cube one night and he goes, "Hey, come in here." So I said, "All right, get in here." He had this big book. I said, "What's this?" He said, "This," and he's whispering to me. He says, "This is where everybody's going when they go home." I'm getting, okay. I said, "Where am I going?" He said, "Kansas." I'm like, "Uh-uh, I don't want to go." Yeah.
I was gonna say, you thought we didn't have mountains in Ohio.
Yeah. and he said, "Well, where do you want to go?" I said, "Either want to go to Ohio, I want to go back to New Hampshire." And he got to looking, no. He goes, "Oh, wait a minute." He says, "Well, how about Massachusetts? Does that work?" And I said, "Yep." He goes, "Okay." And I, "What'd you do?" And he goes, "We just sent some poor guy to Kansas."
Hey. Helps to have friends in high places.
I just want to think about that. Like, I want to know where that guy is now. Like, what he's doing with his life in Kansas.
I know, yeah. It's like, oh, man. Crazy. Yeah, so it's little things like that
yeah.
happened that were just, like, so crazy.
So how long were you in Massachusetts?
I was there about close to, let's see here, I got back. Close to a year.
Okay.
Because, right after I got back there, within about a couple months, they called me into the commander's office there, and I went in, and we'd gotten along really good because his dad had a cabin up in either New Hampshire or Maine, and he knew that I had friends up in that area, so there's no sales tax up there.
Yeah.
So he would let me have days off and everything to go up there like on a Friday and nice. buy him all the stuff he needed, like all the beer and stuff he needed to stock his cabin.
Uh-huh.
And then I'd bring it back, you know, to him on the Monday, you know. Mm-hmm. But he called me in there and he started to chew me up one side down the other and yelling at me, and I'm like, what the heck did I do? I was really and he goes, "You have been at the time I was a sergeant." He goes, "You've been a staff sergeant for 4 months. Why don't you have your stripes on?" He threw them down on the desk. I'm like, I stopped and looked at him, and then he started laughing. He goes, "Yes, you really got promoted to staff sergeant." And he said, "They didn't tell you that before you left Vietnam."
Oh, God.
He said, "You're one out of one in 100,000 gets promoted to that grade."
Wow.
That,
well, congratulations.
And he said, "You have just been so lucky here." He said, You got a promotion when you got to your first base due to special circumstances there. He said, you went to Vietnam, you got promoted to sergeant, and then you was working details there. And he said, I worked with it's called DIS, which is like the service version of the CIA.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I did a couple little things for them because of my security clearance I had. And it was sort of crazy. So at some point when we're off the air, I can tell you about that.
I was going to say, do you have stuff? No, like,
oh, snap.
Do you have stuff to this day that you can't publicly talk about?
Not too much, okay. Maybe a couple things.
Okay.
But otherwise, there's just crazy stuff. But anyways, that all this stuff adds up. You get more points being in a battle zone and all that. He said, so you were promoted early.
Mm.
So I got my stripes, and then they promoted me to assistant in charge of the body shop. Or actually, no, I was in charge of the body shop there at this base. And there was I was working under a old retired warrant officer named Wolstenkraft was his name. Wolstenkraft or Wolstenkraft, I don't know. But he was like a crotchety, really little crotchety guys. Jessica, did you ever see the movie Up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy on there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked like him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
and
funny.
He was like, not a lot of people liked him. He didn't like a lot of people. For some reason, he liked me. I don't know. but he let me take over everything and run a bunch of stuff when he wasn't there because he saw how I work.
Yeah. You know,
when I work. I just don't mm-hmm. sit there fluff when the boss is gone. So he had me, take off there and all that stuff. So, but that was a good time there and all that. So I forget where I was going with this.
Oh, yeah. No, you're okay. So what I was interested in is like, what brought you back to Ohio?
Oh, that was coming up next. Okay. Well, what he did, he came in at one point, said they needed to see me down at the main office. So I went down there and was talking to him. And they go, well, mm-hmm. they're closing the base down. I think that's where I started. Yeah, they're closing the base down. They're going to turn it into civilian. So they need to transfer you to Kansas.
And not I said, again.
And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he goes, and then he looked up and he goes, yeah, but what? He said, well, you don't have enough time left for them to transfer you. You got to be at least a year left before they can transfer you. And he says, you need to re-enlist to do this. And I'm looking at him, like, you're kidding me. He goes, no, that, you can do that. And I thought, there's something he isn't telling me. And I said, is there an and here? And he goes, well, yeah. And I go, what is it? He goes, we have another option. And I said, and that is, he says, we have to let you out 4 months early. And I'm like, and yep. You haven't signed the papers yet. So I was about ready to go back home then. And so I got out there December 21st, I think I got out. I didn't tell anybody I was coming home.
Aww.
I was going to be home before Christmas.
So oh, my gosh.
I packed up my Volkswagen I had at the time. And then there was another guy that lived in northern Ohio who happened to be the grandson. Well, it was the grandson. He's either grandson or great-grandson of Dwight Eisenhower.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
He was named after him. His name was David. And he was wanting to go home. And I said, I live probably in an hour and a half south of where you live. So if you want mm-hmm. to go home with me, I'll take you home. So he came home with me, and we came up to my mom and dad's house. And we got home in the middle of the night. And I don't remember I still had a house key, or they didn't have the door locked at that time or whatever, but I came in. And we went in just, my mom had the two couches back then. We just laid down on the couches and went to sleep. Well, I woke up the bomb screaming. He was like excited, like shocked.
Everything. Yeah. What are you doing here? Oh my gosh. Especially, oh my God, I bet your family.
Yeah, I said, I'm out. I'm done. So.
Yeah, I bet they were so happy.
Yeah.
And before Christmas, too. That's sweet.
I just didn't feel like they felt I wanted to be a career, military guy.
Yeah. It sounds like you'd used up a lot of luck already. I'm like, maybe your default setting should be love of nature and the best luck ever. It's disguised as bad luck, like the falling and stuff, but the way you come out from
luck from a perspective.
You walk out of all those situations.
Like, he has like nine lives luck. Like he'll survive anything, but
and not have to do it in Kansas.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, maybe that's why I like cats so much.
Yes, so I actually wanted to get to that.
I used to be a cat in past life or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, well, that's why I wanted to tie in like nature lover. So my entire life we have always had cats. Which if anyone who has even met me for 5 seconds knows that I'm an insane cat lady. And that comes from my parents. Did you have cats growing up, Dad?
We had one when I was a teenager, but that's about it. Mm. It wandered through, and it was an indoor-outdoor.
Okay.
Came in. and it was called Gray. Aww. It was a little male that was the toughest little cat I ever seen in my life. By the time he disappeared, which he probably got eaten by a coyote or something.
No. I was going to say, was it a coyote?
He looked my first like guess. A boxer that had been boxing Muhammad Ali and George Foreman and all of them at the same time.
Wow.
Because his ears were almost gone. He had scars all over his face, all over his head and back and everything. But he would just, it was so gentle and so, you know, he loved to be with his family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He would just sit up in your lap and purr and everything. But boy, when he went outside, he would not tolerate anything on his property that didn't belong there.
That's so funny. I was literally, so we were visiting my family in Indianapolis, and it's my mom's uncle and aunt and then her cousin. And I haven't seen them in so long. And we were there and we ended up talking about old times and like old pets. Like my great grandma had a cat named Woody. And my dad was just telling me about Woody and how he's like the most badass cat. He used to try to like fight the neighbor's Doberman.
Oh my god!
Like he just like he would like stroll around him, and I guess another cat was around. He would just like he'd keep an eye on him, and then if he got too close, just chase him away. Like so, he could hold his own for being.
Yeah.
It seems like a stupid thing to do, but for some reason, he was still pulling it off.
Well, that was like
that's amazing.
Our whole lives, like we had tough ass cats because, like, we had Smokey when I was growing up, and he was indoor outdoor, and like he fought everything that moved in the entire world. And he got treed at one point.
Punk.
He got treed for like 3 or 4 days, and he was fine.
Jeez.
Yeah. Like, and then even Pookie, who just died last year, she got attacked by dogs, and she lived like another 2 or 3 years.
Pookie.
So now they
that's
have
so cute.
So now they have 3 cats. My mom and dad do.
What are their names?
Dad, you want to talk about the cats you have now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got little Peanut and I think Iki, and then we've got our latest is Indy. I think we got I think Iki was first. Yeah, we got Iki first when the other cats were old. We ended up with her.
No, Peanut.
No, Peanut. I can't think of Peanut.
It's Peanut.
Yeah,
mom found her as a baby in the ditch eating a peanut butter sandwich. Yeah. So that's how they named her. Yeah.
Then little Iki came in. She came wandering in the yard and started hanging out in our patio and ended up in the house here just before we went out west on one of our vacations. And so she became my cat, which is unusual because all the other cats have been gravitated to one of the kids or to Kim. So this one seemed to like me the most for some reason, but that's okay.
Aww.
He's a good little baby.
She is.
But then Indy came up for adoption here about a year or so ago. And I think about, was 8 months or so ago, maybe. And she had been, she's a purebred Bengal that has.
Oh, wow.
Has got out. And had got into a rough situation where she got her one leg broke. And I guess it was broken so bad when they got her and got her into a shelter, they had to take the leg off. So
she's a tripod.
We saw her on online. They said that they were going to put her up for adoption, but she had to heal first. So we fell in love her immediately and put in adoption request for her. And we found out later that we were the ones that were lucky enough to get her. So we've been so happy. She's just a little doll.
Yeah, it's a testament to what what amazing human and cat parents my parents are. They were like one of 50 people who applied to be Indy's parents. And the shelter actually chose my parents because they got a huge letter of recommendation from their veterinarian.
Because
I guess they listed them as a reference, and when the shelter called the veterinarian to ask about my parents, they were like, "You cannot find a better set of people to take care of this cat," and that's how they decided that they wanted my mom and dad for for Indy.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And Indy is
currently
nominated as Richland County's most beautiful cat. If you want to check out the link, I'm going to put it on the default setting site. You can vote for Indy being Richland County's most beautiful cat. All proceeds go to, I believe, the Kiwanis Club and the one of the local animal shelters there in Richland County, Ohio. So you should absolutely.
Oh, that's so cute. Man, Bengals are pretty too. They're so big
beautiful.
And pretty. Like, I don't know how I could not vote for her.
Yeah, no, she's really beautiful. She has amazing spots and she has sparkly fur and it's all just like.
Oh, sparkly.
Yeah, her fur is very sparkly.
Little magic cat.
I know. It's very cool. So, Dad, just to summarize all of this, can you tell us a story about, like, one of your favorite moments in nature?
Where you didn't almost die?
Yeah.
Unless there's more.
Absolutely. We, we were very fortunate and got a trip through your mother and her travel agency to take the Rocky Mountain Railway in Canada
mm-hmm.
to the Banff territory and all that.
Oh, wow.
And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, the most beautiful mountains you'd ever want to see. If anyone gets a chance to go to Banff or Lake Louise, go by all means. You can fly into Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Calgary?
Up there, Alberta.
Oh, okay.
Calgary, and then take an SUV back toward those bays, and you save a lot of money there, but it's an awesome trip.
Wow, and that's a high recommendation because you're just talking about all those other cool places that you've seen.
Yeah, but we were at the Banff Lodge, and we're early riders because we want to get out in nature and see everything. And we decided to, you know, take a nature hike because there's a golf course adjacent to the lodge there. So we went out, and we were watching for anything that would show up, and on the golf course we saw a big elk running around.
Oh wow.
So we thought, okay, we'll just keep our distance and follow it around, see what happens. Well, mm-hmm. it went out and was running across the golf course and stuff, and we probably kept 100 yards or more away from it just to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden we see this little coyote run out and it starts confronting the elk, and we're looking at each other and we're like, oh boy, this kid ain't good for somebody.
Yeah,
you know, that elk is just not going to tolerate this coyote too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, not too long after they got face to face, the elk started digging up the ground. Gonna mop up the field with this coyote, you know. So he put his head down. The coyote looked at him. They looked at it, the coyote like yip yip yip.
Literally trying to bite off more than they could chew.
Yeah.
Right. So we enjoyed our walk down through there, and it was like sort of foggy and stuff. And we came back up through the other way. Just as we were coming back up the hill mm-hmm. on the lodge, the big thing, it sits up on a big hill. And we were at the road at the base of the lodge. So it's like down halfway down the hill. Mm-hmm. And just as we got to the top of that hill, a huge elk came out from the woods and was walking down the road that runs around the lodge. And we're
okay.
Ow. I mean, this thing was like maybe 50, 60 feet away at that time.
Uh-huh.
So we tried to, you know, stay real still so we didn't know what the thing was going to do, and it just sort of walked by us and stopped. Okay, and walked by us and stopped. Well, then we got around it, and I went around it, and after it had gone off into the woods, and just to stand there on the step, I turned around to see what Kim was doing. The thing bugled right there in front of us. That is the most
beautiful
thing we've ever heard. I mean, it was so loud it hurt your ears.
I was about to ask, how loud was that?
But that was just absolute pure nature. I mean, that was probably one of the most inspiring moments in nature I've ever seen. Wow. For both of us.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Yeah, I wouldn't forget that either. I got scared one time with the lions when I was at the zoo. One of them came up. One of them came up to the glass and like roared in my face. I just started crying. I was like 5. It was a little intimidating.
Yeah, if anybody doubts my dad's devotion to nature, he has a really cool scene of nature tattooed on his arm. I went with him to get his tattoo. So
Oh, cool.
If he will let us, I'll put a picture of it on the website too, so you guys can see how cool his tattoo is. Dad, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you. This was awesome. You have so many good stories.
I know, and I haven't even heard half of these. These are really cool. Liz, is there anywhere we can find you on social media?
You know, stuff, maybe Instagram.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, just do some searching on Instagram. You might find Elizabeth. Yeah. You can find me.
I mean, that's your reward. You like if you dig.
Yeah,
for it,
there you go.
you gotta want it.
I would normally ask the guest, like, do you have social media you want to promote? But I don't think you have any social media accounts, do you, Dad?
Nope.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
He'll be out in nature.
He will
go
be
there.
In nature. Stop going on social media and get out in nature is what Dad says.
Yeah, that's where you can find him.
That's where you can find him. Yeah. You can find me at Epic Fall on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook at The Default Setting. I want to thank OK Pants for being our network, and I want to thank Above Below Entertainment for also being our network. I screwed that up because I've been drinking
yes,
peach
wine. Yes, you did.
Wine.
I was like, other way.
OK Pants is our logo designer, and Above Below Entertainment is our network, and I love you guys.